Hadithi yangu, my story. I tell it the way I lived it, the way I understand it, and the way it made me feel. It's my truth, my experience, my life. What's your story? 'Cause we want to hear it. Welcome to Hadithi Yangu podcast, and my name is Cecilia Mlenga, your host and narrator. Today's episode is about a girl named Sabina. Her story begins with a boy who made her heart race in a relationship that would change her life forever. It's the story about first love and the quiet, sometimes painful ways it lingers. Ladies and gentlemen, settle in. This is Sabina's first love. Let me take you back to my secondary days, to the very beginning of school term. If you've ever been to boarding school, you know the first Monday back is quite magical. It's the runway. It's literally the runway. And I think it's different for different schools. If you've been to a mixed school, which means a boy and girl mixed school, then you know, especially when you're a teenager, the first Monday of the new academic year hits different. There's a special excitement to it. And we're going to talk about that. Yeah. So, as I said, we had just gotten back to school. Everyone, you know, on that first Monday has a fresh hairdo, brand new shoes, you know, crisped uniforms and sparkling pencil cases for girls, at least. It's our runway moment. So Sabina says, we were young, eager, and secretly wondering, who's new? Who's watching? And do I look good enough to be seen? That term, I had arrived a little late, so I missed the wave of introductions for the new students. My friends were already abuzz when I entered the dorm on Sunday evening. One of them whispered to me, Sabina, there's some new boys, very, very cute boys, oh, very cute boys. And I was just like, this is not like her. Christine is not like this. How come this time she's equally excited? Because, you know, you have those other girls in school, you know, the more stylish, the more high-end girls that had the boys' attention. But, you know, myself and Christine were just normal girls. So we were never really fazed with the trends and the, you know, the newness of things and new students and all those things. We were just normal girls. We were focused on our studies. We enjoyed ourselves. We just had a good time. But for the first time, Christine is like, hey, they're very cute boys. Oh. So I shrugged it off with a smile, but deep down, I was curious. The next morning, this is Monday morning, the air was thick with perfume, laughter, and nerves as we were getting ready to get out of the dormitories. So I slipped into my best uniform, sprayed on my strawberry body splash. Hey, who doesn't want to smell good? Who does not want to smell fresh? So, you know, back then, having body splash was like you were special. If you've been to boarding school, you're probably not allowed to have all these fancy things, but just smelling nice was different. So I walked into the breakfast hall with the girls, and that's when I saw him. He was tall, with a quiet intensity, the kind of eyes that made you stop mid-step. His name was Adam, and I just overheard one of his friends calling him. And in that moment, something clicked. Not just attraction, but recognition. Like my heart had been waiting for him. I didn't speak to him that day, but I noticed him. And he noticed me, because he glanced. My lips are very glossy. Ah, I loved lip gloss. So as much as I had my uniform, my strawberry body splash, I also had my lip gloss on. And many people say that I had a beautiful smile. One of my friends said, my smile could land 1,000 ships. And I think that's what struck him at first sight. So in the weeks that followed, our paths crossed more often. At first, it was a smile here and there on the hallway. Nothing much, just, you know, boys and girls just being boys and girls. Then a high during prep. Eventually, we found ourselves sitting together next to each other in the TV room, in prep, laughing over nothing, completely at ease. There was no pressure, no performance. It felt natural. Soon, Adam began walking me to the dorm stairs after class, after prep, on the weekends, and even, you know, sometimes he would join me for hikes, movie nights, swimming. It was nothing serious, just companionship. But it felt like I had known him all my life. I didn't feel the need to try too hard. I didn't need to feel that pressure that I needed to please him. I could be myself around him. And I think that's what made me feel like this was it. So the more I got to spend time with Adam, the more my stomach just ran with butterflies. I felt these strong butterflies the moment I would see him. The moment I would smell him, I could almost feel him from a distance when he would approach. Sabina says, one evening, after prep, Adam stopped me as I was about to climb the stairs. Sabina, he said, voice low, eyes serious. We've been talking a while and I really like you. I enjoy your company. I want to be with you. I froze. I literally froze. You know when someone catches you off guard and you were not ready? This was one of those moments. Because, I was just enjoying us just being friends, you know? I mean, I thought about us being together, but, like, I was having a good time. You know, just having conversations about nothing serious. And honestly, I hadn't dated before. So this was, I didn't know what dating looked like. So my expectations of dating and maybe how someone would ask me out was something that really didn't ring a bell. Like, I didn't know what to expect. So I just froze. I froze and had nothing to say. But I remember my heart beating so fast. I could barely speak. But I played it cool, smiled, and said, thanks. I'll think about it. I remember walking away and screaming and saying, yes, 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 yes. But obviously he didn't hear me, but I was so excited. I was so, so excited, and I wanted to cry. I wanted to tell everybody. It was probably one of my favorite moments as a teenager. And for me, I just thought, out of all girls, he chose me. And that meant something because in school, I didn't always feel beautiful. There were girls who were louder, more confident, more visible. They came from rich families. And don't get me wrong, I was confident. I was very confident, but often quietly so. Around other girls like me, I sometimes felt like I was just there. So when Adam chose me, it felt like I was finally seen. Eventually, I said yes. And yeah, we became a couple. He was thoughtful. Whenever he went home on weekends, he would return with gifts for me, snacks, sweets, soap, lotion, whatever. Whatever I ran out of, and I just told him casually, like, oh, I'm thinking about getting XYZ, or oh, I'd really love to have XYZ. He would go ahead and just get it for me. So this was probably the best feeling. I felt like he cared for me. He would protect me. He listened. He didn't necessarily flaunt and try to please me with his words. He was more of an action man. So everything he did was very intentional. No one had ever been, had ever done things like that for me before. So he was kind. I would say he was kind. So he didn't do this just once. He didn't do it twice. This was something that he did often. So it became a norm. I hadn't realized how starved I was for affection until Adam fed me this affection, this love, this care, the attention. And I got used to it. I wanted more and more and more. And every day was a new day, a new feeling, a new excitement. And life finally felt more meaningful. Like, this is exactly what I needed. You see, I grew up in a home where my needs were met: food, clothes, shelter. But love, affection, emotional safety, that was rare. So Adam's gestures weren't just sweet nothing. They were life-changing. They made me feel chosen, cherished enough. We talked about everything with Adam, our futures, our fears. He wanted to marry me. He even introduced me to his mom on a phone call. He said, "Mama, this is Sabina. She's special." And I remember that call. It almost felt like it was such a long call, but that was literally the conversation. "Mama, this is Sabina. She's special." And like when you're sitting with your girlfriends and you meet their parents and they introduce you and they're like, "Oh my God, this is my best friend, and I like her so much, and we do all these things." It's special. But then a teenage girl and a boy introducing you to their mother, You don't see that every day, my friend. You literally don't see that every day. I felt whole. For once, I felt whole. For many years, depression lingered inside of me. My biological parents had long passed on. I had so many broken pieces inside of me. And worse enough, broken by people I trusted and hoped that would be my safety net, but sometimes it never seemed to be possible. They didn't show up for me in the way that I wanted them to. You know, sometimes it'd be with other family, friends and cousins, and you would automatically feel left out because all of them had their own parents holding them, protecting them, guiding them. And for me, I was very isolated. I was alone. And I never felt like I could fit in. I never felt that love was possible for me. I spent a lot of days and nights missing my mother and my father, thinking about the type of love that they would show me if they were around. And it was just unfortunate. I think we'll spend another episode talking about Sabina's lost parents and what happened to them. So Sabina says, I wondered whether there was something about me that didn't attract love. I felt like a shadow in my own body. But Adam managed to take that away. Take away the pain. After meeting Adam, my world changed. It felt warm and happier. I experienced a new norm. When I returned home during the holidays, it just felt dark and gloom. I didn't feel like going back home. I really, really honestly just wanted to stay in school. Because that was now my happy place. That's where I spent my days with Adam. I spent my days with my friends. We went swimming. We went hiking. We did all the fun things a young person would want to do. And there are some people who would be wondering, did these kids really go to school? How come Sabina doesn't talk about, you know, classes and all those things? I was actually quite bright. I attended my classes. I did all the things that were expected of me of school. I was a very, very good girl. So let me just put that out there, Sabina says. So I preferred being at school with my friends and Adam. But like every story, or let me say my story, my truth, my honesty, my reality, my perfect love, Adam. Eventually, things started to shift. I started noticing some cracks. But one evening, Adam opened up to me about something heavy. His battles with addiction, his financial struggles, the pressures to provide for his mom, for me, for himself. He believed he had to keep up a certain lifestyle to survive, to stay sane, to be useful, to be needed. He hadn't shared this with me before, but he hadn't shared this with anyone as well. So I remember this being one of the most challenging times for me because the boy that I love very much, as young as he is, how was it possible that he was struggling with addiction? How was it possible that he was struggling financially? I never really sat down to assess and understand his family dynamics for him really to be in this type of challenges, to experience this type of hardship. So it was a shock. In fact, it was very painful. It ached in my heart, in my soul, in every aspect of my body. I felt like he didn't deserve this. He was a good boy. He treated me so perfectly. How was it possible that he was the one to experience such challenges? So I promised him to be his shoulder. I thought if I loved him hard enough, just maybe I could heal him. You know, there's a funny thing about women. Women usually think that, I can change him. I can make him better. He loves me so much. So he'll definitely do better. Mm-hmm. So I hoped for the best. We stayed together through his ups and downs, the challenges that I had in my life as well. I told him about my family dynamics. I told him about my depression. I was just a teenage girl, but I loved him with the depth of someone twice my age. It was intense. It was very mature. I would say the most mature relationship I've ever had. Weeks to come, I started noticing his fingers and toes had been poked, a little red under his nails. And I remember seeing this type of thing in movies. So now, seeing this on a real person, seeing this on my Adam, at first I didn't ask him, but I decided to do my own research and to see what drug users used to experience this high. And I remember reading online possibilities of him using heroin or cocaine. So I remember I spent that night crying, wondering whether I was able to change his mind. If I was to speak to him, would that be enough? If I was to tell him possible outcomes of long-term usage, would that change his mind? Was he in too deep? Had he just started? Maybe I was very confused. I was so confused and I really wanted to help. So it was a nightmare. It hurt me so much because I loved him and he was a good person, a good boy in just a terrible situation. I wasn't sure if me loving him was enough. I thought about talking to his mother, but she was sick, so I simply couldn't do it, honestly. I thought about telling the teachers, but then he would probably be sent out of school, and I was already in a very tricky situation. And Sabina says, later in the story, I'll explain all those other gaps, all the things that you're thinking. Why was his mother, asking for money? Why did he feel the need to support his family? What were the dynamics? What were the challenges? We'll get to hear more about that later. So telling his mother was definitely not an option. Sharing such news could easily escalate her sickness, so I kept quiet. And I remember one day, it was a weekend, I was in the dormitory, and he sent me a text. He said, "Hey, babe, meet me down the fields." And I was like, "Okay, I'm finishing up something, but I'll be there as soon as I can." So it took me, let's say, 20, 30 minutes. I went to exactly where he told me to meet him. And I remember seeing an Adam that was quite unusual. He was not himself. He was joyful in the most strangest way. You know, when you see someone laughing, smiling, his eyes were red. He didn't look like himself. And I remember just before I sat down, Adam fell on the floor.
Hey, let's take a quick break. Dear listener, thank you for taking this journey with us. We are so grateful to have you on board. To help us grow, please share this show with a friend. Don't forget to subscribe. We are on Instagram and TikTok under the name Hadith Yango Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Share your feedback. And if you have a story you want to share with the world, send us a DM or an email on hadithyangopodcast@gmail.com.
As I told you, Adam had fainted. I really thought, okay, is this a joke? Is he playing? Or am I missing something? I tried to wake him, thinking maybe he was just joking. Maybe, you know, he wanted us to play. So I thought maybe I shouldn't be worried. But then I was like, okay, let me just try to wake him again. I continued to wake him, shaking him vigorously, hoping and believing this was all fun and games. So 10 minutes passed and still he was out. I started getting seriously worried. Because, I mean, even if we were playing, for how long? I thought about getting the school nurse or calling the matron. But all I could think of was Adam's future. They could expel him. And I had seen it with so many other kids. They had expelled kids that used to smoke, you know, smoke weed, do all these crazy things. And I wasn't sure if I'd be able to live with myself. I paused. I was like, okay, let me pray. Our Father who art in heaven. Oh, okay. I prayed. And then continued to pray. And how in the world did I get myself into this madness? I thought to myself. What if he doesn't wake up? I started praying even louder and louder, holding Adam's hand, checking his pulse like the movies, performing CPR on his chest, and everything I was taught in primary school as a scout girl. I was losing it. I was losing it. I was so confused. I didn't know what to do. So I decided to call someone. Someone I trusted. I called my brother. He was a medical student, so why not? This is the perfect plan. I mean, I didn't know what to expect, but I was like, okay, out of everyone I could really think of, my brother would be the ideal person. So, yeah, I called my brother. Daniel was shocked. Shocked by my involvement with such a person. But little did he know how Adam made me feel. And he, you know, and the way Adam really cared for me. For Daniel, he could never relate. He could never understand. He didn't know what it was like to be me. I, Sabina, who felt sidelined and unheard. And here with Adam, I felt seen, heard, and understood. I felt complete when I was with Adam. But when I picked that phone and when I called Daniel, I felt complete judgment from Daniel. But nonetheless, I couldn't care. All I wanted was my Adam to be saved. Daniel promised to come to campus immediately. It was the weekend and family could visit. In half an hour, Daniel arrived at school, rushing to come find me, to rescue me and Adam.
When Adam arrived, he came with an injection. He pierced slowly into Adam's hand, and a few minutes later, Adam was awake in total confusion. The joy on my face could never be matched. I touched Adam everywhere, so confused, yet so surprised, yet so, so excited. I was in awe of this miracle. I didn't know if this was even possible. So Adam was awake, and all I could think of is, should I ask him? Should I, is it the drugs? Was he sick? I really didn't know. Daniel didn't say much though. He looked at me as if he was, you know, he wanted to leave. But before he left, he took a long good look at me and said, "If anything ever happens to Sabina, I will kill you myself." Oh man, I never heard Daniel so deliberate and yet so serious. And all I could think of was, oh my God, is Adam okay? Because, I mean, this is my brother, and these are not the best meeting circumstances. Well, but Daniel knew nothing about Adam. And this was the first time Adam and Daniel were meeting. Adam knew very little of Daniel, and he didn't expect to meet him in these terrible circumstances. So I remember Adam, head down, feeling ashamed of what had happened. And he politely apologized to Daniel, promising that no such thing would ever happen again. Sabina says, "Ceci, this is one of many events I kept my education on the line for Adam. He did many things. Some very illegal. And all I could do was love. Well, at least that's what I thought. I thought, I can change him. Definitely for the better. He loves me. So he will have to change. And honestly, he continued to convince me that he would change and we would live happily ever after. So why shouldn't I believe him? I was so deep in love, sinking, swimming in toxic love. I cried many nights, but I was unsure what was next. And truly, it got worse. When this happened, I didn't think I could overcome it. I thought, how stupid of me to trust this boy. Oh, man. Oh, man. You know, when you think, oh, this shit is real bad, and then something even worse happens, and you're like, damn, this shit is really, really bad, and it's definitely getting worse. So, yeah. Then came betrayal. One Saturday evening, as I was undoing my braids on my bunk bed in the dormitory, my roommate approached me and opened up to me about a very strange situation. She told me that Adam had asked her out. Adam asked her out and confirmed firmly that we were no longer together. Adam asked her out. Yes. I didn't think that was possible, but yeah. He convinced her that he never loved me and that he was only messing around with me, that we were not serious. He didn't even envision me in his future. It was her that was perfect for him. They were the same tribe, so what a perfect couple. Marriage wouldn't be an issue. I mean, culturally and traditionally, that would work perfectly. I was devastated. We hadn't broken up. We had a small argument, yes, but this, this. So the girl suggested we set him up. So we did. She called him over one evening and I hid behind the staircase. I listened as he told her with confidence that he and I were no longer together, that we were done, that she was his future. Yep. I stepped out and confronted him, of course. I shouted with anger, tears running down my face. If you could lie about us like this, Adam, you could do worse. Never speak to me again. I ran in the field, broken into a million pieces, wanting my life to just end, so that all this pain I was feeling would stop. I was shocked, confused by how the boy that said loved me and cared for me deeply could do such a thing. I couldn't wrap my head around the real definition of love. Maybe there's something I was missing. Maybe I was so stupid, and all this time I was living in a fairy tale. But Adam, Adam ran after me. He begged, he cried, he chased me. He said it was a joke, that he loved me, not her. He said he was playing around with her. He said I made him so angry, and for that he had no choice but to turn to someone else for comfort. He said, men don't cry like girls when they're upset. Real men have to use another girl to get over another. Sabina, you pushed me. I would never do this to you if you didn't annoy me so much. Oh, man. Can you imagine? Can you imagine someone telling you something like that? I couldn't believe the words that came out of Adam's mouth. I felt even more broken. I couldn't speak. I didn't respond. The damage was done. I tried to walk away. I tried to ignore his calls. He rang my phone over 40 times that night. The next day, I avoided him in class. I didn't speak to him that whole week. However, he didn't stop trying. My teachers were worried for me. My concentration in class dipped. I didn't participate as I did before. There was a dark, dark cloud lingering, and I didn't know how to make it better. The only way was with Adam. After all that Adam had done and all the craziness, I kept hidden for Adam in the name of love. Somehow, I still went back. Oh, yeah. We got back together. And again, and again, and again. And I mean, there are so many things that would happen. And we would break up and then get back together. And then break up again and get back together. And honestly, at the time, I thought I was crazy. And at the time, I really didn't understand how that was possible. But yeah. We got back together. We got back together and we continued. The relationship became unstable. Toxic even. He would hurt me emotionally and I would take him back for the crumbs of love. I didn't know I deserved more, obviously, I was a teenager. Eventually, I broke it off with him for good. I sent him a message from home after one term. I can't do this anymore. I want to live my life. Please live yours. He blew up my phone again, that I didn't answer. That relationship changed me. It shaped the way I saw love and the way I saw men. It planted seeds of fear, doubt, and mistrust. And in every relationship after that one, I overcompensated. I tried too hard. I stayed too long. I gave too much, trying to recreate a love that had long since broken me. You see, when your first real taste of love is both intoxicating and wounding, it becomes difficult to believe that love can exist without pain. So I share this story not to bash Adam, nope, but to say our firsts often leave imprints we carry for years. And healing isn't about forgetting. It's about owning our stories, reclaiming our power and saying, oh, I'm worthy of a love that doesn't hurt. After I sent that final message to Adam, a strange silence fell over my world. I'd been so used to his presence, his text, his voice, his drama, and suddenly, mute, nothing. Just me, alone, sitting with the ache of a goodbye. I spent days crying, nights too, curled up under my hostel blanket, trying to replay where things went wrong. Was I not enough? Did I imagine it all? But eventually the tears slowed, and something else took their place. Yes, and that was clarity. I didn't want to love anymore, not like that. Not if it meant losing myself every time. That term, I made a quiet decision. No more love stories. I was going to choose me. I buried myself in books. I raised my hand more in class. I joined study groups and volunteered to organize debates. I even started spending lunch breaks in the library, just to avoid bumping into Adam. Or the memory of him. But the real shift. I turned to the people who had been there all along. My best friend Christine was the first to notice. "You're glowing differently," she said one evening as we shared biscuits on her bed. "You're sad, I can tell, but you're also becoming like yourself again." My cousin Lydia, who was in upper class, became a safe space. On weekends, we would take long walks around the school compound. She pushed, but she was patient. And when I spoke, she just listened. Even my mom noticed a change in my messages. "Oh, you sound strong, my love," she wrote. "Whatever you're going through, God is with you." And it is true, I was going through it. That was the only way to go through it. There were days I still missed him, still wondered if he had changed, if he thought about me at all. But more often than not, I thought about me, my future, my voice, my peace. And that was new. Looking back, that chapter of my life taught me one of my first real lessons. Oh boy. Love isn't always enough. Love without honesty, without respect, without change, it's not the love that I wanted. No, not anymore. And when you've grown up feeling unseen, it's easy to confuse attention with affection, but they're not the same. I was learning to see the difference, slowly, painfully, but clearly. I won't lie, a part of me still loved, or even believed in love. But in that moment, I knew I wasn't ready. I had to heal. To become the kind of girl who didn't beg, but waited. Waited for someone that was truly, truly gonna be intentional for me. And the kind of woman who knew her worth before anyone else could ever define it. I wanted to find that. I was eagerly looking to find that. So I stayed single. I studied. I laughed. I grew. I rediscovered myself outside of anyone's gaze. I wasn't concerned anymore. I didn't spend a lot of time in that area. And even when boys would approach me, I would easily turn it down because I wasn't ready. But don't get me wrong. This isn't the end of my story. No. Somewhere deep inside, love still lived. Dormant. Hiding. But not dead. And in time, it would find its way back. Then one day, 7 years later, love knocked at my door again. Too shiny, too familiar, too tempting. Thank you for listening to Sabina's First Love. Till next time, my name is Cecilia Mlenga.
Dear listener, thank you for taking this journey with us. We are so grateful to have you on board. To help us grow, please share this show with a friend. Don't forget to subscribe. We are on Instagram and TikTok under the name Hadith Yango Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Share your feedback. And if you have a story you want to share with the world, send us a DM or an email on hadithyangopodcast@gmail.com.